What's happening, weirdos?
What's happening, weirdos?
What's happening, weirdos? Welcome to What's Happening, Weirdos.
The offshoot of You Made It Weird. I have low energy right now, but don't worry.
It's because he left it all on the field.
Yeah, not in the episode. This is a wonderful episode. Only a couple things to plug up top before we get into it. We're so glad you guys are here. Thank you. PeteHolmes.com. I'm doing a Netflix is a fest show in Los Angeles.
Netflix is a joke fest.
Netflix is a fest joke, which is so funny because I'm noticing that one of the motivations to sell that out is because everyone has a Netflix
is a joke fest show. Everyone.
And you're like, one. I really don't want to be the one where like nine people are there and one of them is Ted Sarandos. And I'm just like, sorry. Which of course isn't the case, but it's going to be a fun one. And I have Largo on the 30th of this month, which is also going to be a great one.
Yep.
We just added Irvine Improv, a little one night show, and another one night show, I think at the Oxnard Improv. I'm not sure about that, but go to PeteHolmes.com. Those are all available, and as well as Chicago, which isn't until May, but it's available now. And if you like the show, really, 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 really means a lot. If you try a Pete's Pick, these are things that I actually use and love. So Katie, run those ads. If you like the show and you want to support it, why not try a Pete's Pick? One of them, Modern Mammals. I talk about this constantly. Modern Mammals is the only shampoo that I found that cleans your hair but doesn't look like you shampooed your hair. Because let's be honest, when you shampoo your hair, it looks like absolute shit. It looks like a bale of hay that you tossed in a dryer, gets crisped. It gets unruly. It looks terrible. Usually if I had a TV appearance or an important event where I had to look good, my strategy was I wouldn't wash my hair for 2, 3, 4 days leading up to it. So it would have some of that natural moisture, some of that hold. Now, Modern Mammals can clean my hair. My hairdresser used to complain, Kat, my friend, that my hair was dirty, that it was gross. And it was, because I wasn't cleaning it, because I didn't want it to look like crap. Modern Mammals cleans your hair, but it maintains that natural hold and that some of that oil and some of that, I don't know how to explain it. It keeps it looking great. It's almost like you have product in your hair, almost like a dry shampoo, but when you wash it, it looks as good as it can. So there have only already got 40,000 guys that have switched to Modern Mammals instead of traditional shampoo. Once you use it, you will be hooked for life. I tell people about it all the time. It's a small grassroots punk rock company. I absolutely love it. They have bars for the no plastic version with no fragrance, or bottles, which is like a magic gray mud that I love the feeling and the smell of, that gets your hair perfect every single time. 6 seconds to perfect hair. Go to modernmammals.com/weird, where people can get a special combo deal and try both products, the bar and the bottle, for $44. That lasts a really, really long time. So $44 for both, you'll be set for a while and your hair will look perfect and won't look like absolute shit. Shampoo sucks. Go to Modern Mammals. Also, we're brought to us by another piece of technology. I guess you could call Modern Mammals technology. If there's one piece of actual tech that has changed my life more than any other in the past years, it is hands down my Apollo Neuro, which I'm wearing right now. I'm always wearing it when I do late night, when I do stand up. What is it? It's a wearable piece of tech that helps your body recover from stress, that sends vibrations into your body, sending a signal to your nervous system that gives it the sensation of being held or touched. It's like a wearable virtual hug that helps calm and regulate your nervous system. It can help you relax, sleep, focus, and be more productive. I was just writing before I did this intro. I had it set to focus, which they have the data to back, helps fight off symptoms of ADD. It's a wearable hug using touch therapy to help you feel safe and in control. You can wear it on the wrist like I do, or on your ankle. Helps me fall asleep and stay asleep at night. In fact, that's a new feature that they've updated, that it will sense when you have woken up and rerun the program without you even doing anything. So sometimes I'm awake in the night and I'll just notice my Apollo's turned back on and it lulls me back to sleep. Rebuild and recover, wonderful for after you've been stressed. Calm, which is wonderful for meditation. Unwind, which is what I put it on when I'm watching TV at the end of the day to help me prepare for bed. It's wonderful for energy, focus, sleep, relaxation. It is a game changer and a life changer, developed by a neuroscientist and a board-certified psychiatrist who've been studying the impacts of chronic stress in humans for nearly 15 years. Apollo's effects on stress, sleep, cognitive performance, and recovery have been proven in multiple clinical trials and real-world studies. So this is not a mood ring. This is not a crystal. This is hard science. 10% off. Go to apolloneuro.com/weird. Get one for yourself. Get one for a friend. It's a wonderful gift. We've given many as gifts. 10% off, apolloneuro.com/weird.
Okay. All right, everybody.
I mean, get into it.
I get to feeling like this. I get to wishing that there were two of you. My heart cries out, oh, baby, I love you so much.
I'm just in here singing to yourself.
I wish that there was more of you to touch.
Oh, you're recording.
I can't get enough of you, baby.
30 seconds of this.
Can't get enough of you, baby. Smash Mouth gets...
Is that Smash Mouth? Okay. Start over.
What do you mean? You're embarrassed? You think that's embarrassing to not know that that's Smash Mouth?
That's Smash Mouth?
Well, that's there. Might as well be walking. Here's the three Smash Mouth songs. Somebody once told me the number two. 25 years ago, they broke out and they took out and together they dumped and together they dumped and they broke out with guitars and sound kind of just singing and clapping. Man, what the hell happened?
Okay.
Here's my thing is if
what's
that
the third one?
I'll get to it, but
I can't handle the like dark in here, bright behind you.
Turn a light on.
All right. I will. You have some Smash Mouth to sing. So.
Well, and then the third one is Can't Get Enough of You, Baby. Here's my thing. And I think we've talked about this maybe before. Smash Mouth, if that was a Beatles song, I don't think anybody...
Peter Holmes.
Shush.
That's why I got
you
embarrassed.
You thought I Can't Get Enough of You, Baby was a Beatles song?
And that I was like, that's Smash Mouth? And then I got embarrassed. It sounds exactly like a Beatles song. Hey. Or like a... like. The Kinks or any of
it's
it.
Funny that you said the Kinks because the Kinks is they have that song that's on Leela's playlist.
Yeah, well respected man.
How does it go?
Is that
no?
Is that it?
That sounds like a Johnny Cash. I'm a well respected man.
No, I think it is a well. I think it is well respected.
I did Johnny Cash, old Johnny Cash singing Since You've Been Gone.
Do it. What do you mean you did it? When?
As if it's an event. I did that. Alone in my trailer, and it was, here's the thing, we started out friends.
Very good.
It was cool, but it was all pretend.
Very good. Now do Billy.
Yeah, yeah.
Billy Joe.
Since you've been gone.
Very good.
Billy Joe from Green Day?
Yeah. I don't want to hear you say,
I only want to be with you.
It is the nose is plugged.
Never felt that way. But since you've been gone. This is my point. What is the Kinks song, though?
Well-respected man, but I can't think of how it goes.
How does it go? I'm a well-respected... We're just in a ref loop. Okay, well, I'm going to look it up.
Respected man.
We're going to look it up right quick. Because my point, and I think we're all ahead of me on this, is that like, I don't understand music. I know. Yeah, I know. I did it twice. Ah, I typed in you too. No.
First you did you.
I don't know why. It's like I'm used to a different keyboard. I keep trying to hit return. So Kinks... Well-respected man.
See?
Tell me this isn't a Beatles song.
'Cause he gets up in the morning.
Tell me! Tell me that's not Lennon McCartney.
I mean, it's the same genre. It's like British Invasion, 60s.
It is all so good.
But here's the thing. I'm sure people who
oh, so fun.
Really, I'm sure there are people screaming at their radios.
Good one, Paul. And he's now George, try a little riff there, mate.
Down, 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 down. You've done it again, you shaggy motherfucker. You've done it again. It's all
there, but we can't speak on this because we're not as familiar with, you know what I mean? Like, most people love the Beatles, and I like the Beatles
into
too.
The mic, darling.
And they know, they probably hear something different in that than we don't.
Disagree.
You just think your way is the right way,
and that's
don't
what
you?
Makes me such a delight.
That's true.
Nobody wants to get on a carousel at the carnival and have the carousel go like, should I keep going in a circle? What makes it an attraction is that they're like, well, you go one way, baby, this way. Round and round and round, and some of us go up and down, and some of us are seats where you can sit if you're obese. I'm not shaming it. Let's just be honest. Those seats are for the very, very old and the obese.
Oh, my God.
Buddy. You can't be saying people are obese, man. Obese is a... By the way... I'm pretty sure if you did my BMI, I'm beast, baby.
Yeah, you should be sitting in those chairs.
Valerie, how do you know I know? How do I know that they're for the obese? Are they for me? I'm plopping down my long, gangly, heavy bones. Yeah.
In the office when he says,
sorry, what?
Is she a pants wearer or a dress wearer? when Michael's trying.
Oh, my God. When he's trying to suss out. If he's being set up with a heavier person.
It's terrible.
That show is terrible.
Oh, my goodness.
Bring
so
down
offended.
The office. Bring it straight to hell. This voice is wrong. It's like kind of like an effeminate man. It's wrong.
What do you mean it's wrong for this song?
Can I say something?
Yes.
I had this dream. Can you do some music?
Oh. Doom, 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 doom.
Act
doom,
one. Doom, the dream. Doom, doom. Peter woke up, realizing that he had had a dream. It was different from his other dreams. He walked outside from a house on a hill and saw that there was a desk left outside. This is, okay, I'm just going to do it normal now.
That was really great.
You were great. That music was great.
Thank you. It's a hard song to bum, bum, bum.
Wait, that's a real song?
Well, then I didn't do
it. Is that
great.
The Beatles?
No, that's our song. That's our Gymno PD.
Oh.
Bum, 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 bum. That's not right.
No.
Bum,
dun, dun, dun. Oh.
I told you. There's a weird, dun, like, dun, F7 dun, minor.
Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun. It doesn't do it for da, 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 da. Oh, that third note is hard.
Da, 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 da. Is Billie Eilish a lesbian?
I'm sure all Gen Zers are. Like, not they're beyond the labels. They're like,
beyond beat. They're beyond beef, man.
I think like Leela, when we're like, you know, if you're a lesbian, it's okay with us, and we think we're being progressive. Like, yeah. She'll be like, lesbian isn't a thing anymore. Everybody just fucks whoever they want.
I have a friend, Tony, he fucks the third ring of Saturn with his planetary intergalactic dick. What's he, Dad? So many things to say. The dream. I do want to finish my point on music because I think I'm, well, carousel. I think I'm right.
Okay.
Just becoming Adam Carolla slowly. Ah, music is dumb. I like Adam. I do.
Yeah.
Okay. So the dream was, there was this house and it was like on a cliff and I walked out. I think it was my house. And then I walked out and there was a desk. Mm-hmm. And in the desk, I'm opening the drawer. It's just in the middle of like kind of an alcove of rock, but it was outside.
The desk was outside?
That's very important. The desk was outside.
Sounds beautiful.
Thank you. There's something beautiful in that. And I'm opening the drawers, not underwear. I'm opening the drawers.
Nobody was thinking that. Why would you keep underwear on your desk?
Well, some people call your underwear your drawers.
Oh.
Like, here's an example.
Nobody would think that.
Let's go to the club, man. I'm just trying to get into some drawers.
I know. You didn't have to use it in a sentence. I know the
definition.
Well,
here's another one you might not know. Laundry, like drop your laundry.
Oh, really?
My dad would say that. I think it's an army thing. He's not. He was never in the army, but they would say like, drop your knocks and socks, maggots. I love how they always say maggot in the movies. And you're like, was it? Was
it? Were they saying?
Was it maggot?
Maggot.
Was it maggot?
Oh boy.
What a terrible.
You know what? In the army, they're very rude.
Well, that is a funny sketch. All right, maggots, line up. Excuse me.
Rude. That is so rude.
I think they've had to fold some of that in.
I would
It's
hope
the weirdest
so.
Thing to add polity to, you know. What is the word?
Is polity a word?
I've
like, well, politeness?
If it's not, I've been using it. I'm googing it.
I'm goog. You know what?
I'm giving it a goog. I'm giving it a goog.
Also not a word. I'm googing it.
Polity.
Like
polity definition.
That is
in a respectful.
That is politely.
Polity. Here we go. That's a word. Polity, a form or process of civil government. Oh my God.
This is like when I thought.
Can I say?
When I was saying formidable as like, those are my formidable years.
That is very delicious.
That was
That's divinely
that
delicious.
That went like, I was like an English teacher when I was saying that.
I
and
was
then
listening.
I had to go formable, formidable.
Okay.
But that's not right either.
Formidable. Formidable. But that's a pronunciation thing, I'm pretty sure.
But if you're saying like my most formable years, like
you say my formative.
Formative, that's what it
years.
Is. Yes.
BT Debs, I was listening to a Rupert Spira retreat, which I've unlocked. I've leveled up.
Okay.
Meaning I was rocking with Rupert on the YouTube, and of course I read his books. But then I realized you could go on his website, rupertspira.com/weird for 10% more. and you can just listen to the retreats, like the retreat we went to. They just record them and I'm listening to them. And there was this guy, and of course he reminded me too much of me, but he was like, he called himself not an Anglophile, but like a languageophile, a linguophile.
Oh.
He's like, and I'm a linguophile. And I immediately was like,
that's not a word.
Sir, I just took your dinner. Like, you don't get dinner today. You can't say you're a linguophile.
Like, because that's so pretentious.
But also so familiar. That wouldn't bother me.
Right.
But I saw him doing what I do a lot, which is try to talk fancy. I like talking fancy, but it's just a tongue sturbation.
It really is.
But I love it.
Kind of the worst.
I think language, when used well.
like struggling to say it. When you talk so good.
That's a Steve Martin bit. He goes, the English language, so few people speak with pizzazz. Isn't that good?
With pizzazz.
But one of the things I like about flowery or deliberate language is it communicates a certain, and I'm not even talking about fancy language, but deliberate language, communicates thoughtfulness, communicates like not a threat. Meaning if somebody's like, was that you bumped in my car? You know, sorry.
So loud to me.
Like, or just sort of like, my foot stick's gone real red hard, you know, or whatever it is.
Actually, my
foot stick's gone real red hard.
That is really
interesting. But when somebody's like, I have an erection, you're kind of like, okay, at least he's calm about it.
I don't know. I love words, and I was an English major, so that... All that really I took away from that was that I hate pretentious speakers because they're using words that most people don't understand. I love deliberate.
No, I know.
Like
it's the first class lounge.
Alain de Botton is like such a good communicator.
And he uses ordinary language.
And he uses ordinary language. But I love a well-placed right word.
I agree.
I also love when somebody says a word I don't know that's like beautiful sounding and I'm like, ooh, that's a good word.
Well, there's an invitation to learning there, yes.
Right. But if you're only doing that, it's just like, who is this for? It's not for the listener.
Well, it can be for the listener if you want to flatter their intellect. If you want to be, but this guy used the word obtuse and I was like, no lunch for you either.
Yeah.
Like you said something and it was like, but that's obtuse. And I was like, I don't know why, but obtuse is one of those words.
I know.
Where I'm out. Like I'm already in the car. I'm already in New Mexico. I keep saying obtuse.
I can't say obtuse. Like if I do say that word, I'm always saying it like obtuse.
Of course.
Like,
we talk of things that matter in words that must be said. Like obtuse.
But what is it before we talk of things that matter?
Is the theater really dead?
But what is it before that?
In words that must be said.
No, but there's something in between.
We talk of things that matter in words that must be said. Oh, it's something like, is therapy worthwhile? It's something like that.
Something like, it's something worthwhile.
Is the theater really dead?
Yeah.
That's a Paul Simon and Garfunkel song.
Is the theater really dead?
I call it Paul Simon and Garfunkel out of disrespect for art.
Yeah, well, that is one of the most disrespected men in America, so I don't think. He's a not respected man. Hit the Kinks song again.
Oh my God. And it's, tell me that's not the Beatles. And it's all so good. And it's all so fun. And also, and I saw her face. Now I'm a believer.
That's not the Beatles.
That's the Monkees.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's the same genre.
Yeah, I know. Okay. So I'll give the Beatles the credit for spearheading the initiative, but then other people did it. I'm going to say
is kind
just
of...
as well. And I'm going to get real offensive and say Smash Mouth just as well. It's like sometimes you hear a song and you're like, that could have been a Nirvana song.
Right.
It just wasn't.
Yeah.
But it's just as
yes, it's happening.
I'll be listening to songs and I'm like, this song's okay. And if it was a Nirvana song, it would be one of my favorite songs of all time.
Meaning like if nothing about it changed, you just found out that Nirvana did it.
I mean, with Kurt's voice. Kurt it.
And that's what I'm saying is like, I'm sure if I played the right Taylor Swift song, the right Olivia Rodrigo song, and the right Billie Eilish song, all three to my mom.
Yeah, she wouldn't.
She would think they were all the same person. Because she's like, she hasn't put in the hours to notice the nuance. And
that
I think that's what people have done.
So those are audiophiles that love. It's like they sip wine and they taste boot leather, you know? And some people are like, that was good wine. And that's fun. Gives life meaning.
Boot leather in the wine?
Yeah, that's one of the flavors you can taste. It's like leather. Yeah. You might not say boot leather.
This is such a fancy episode.
This is fancy.
Listen to me sip my Queen of the South tea.
This episode is so fancy, it's being shot up your already clean butt.
Okay, it's like getting less fancy by the second.
So in the same way that people that pay attention to music enjoy that you're like, well, the reason the Kinks isn't a Beatles song, they never would have had a bridge like that, or Paul would have brought it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the people that love language are also trying to find the others. You know, it's a way of... Mm-hmm. So if you talk to me and you use a word that I love, formerly polity, wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I was trying to say was this dude was bugging me only because he reminded me of me. And I don't remember what my point was.
Well, I was also going to say...
He did say obtuse and I hated it. That might have been enough of a point.
In the
beginning,
in defense of like Southern language, I actually think they are often great communicators.
Oh, yeah.
And there is like a tongue in cheek, like there is something, it's almost more impressive because they're communicating with, this is a generalization, but I'm talking about like the dialect of the culture is often communicating with less vocabulary words.
We must have talked about this before. Go ahead.
And like, and also with more sayings. And there's some great sayings like, you know, you can't polish a turd. Yeah. Like that comes, that like is very valuable for a lot of things.
I completely agree.
And also my papa used to say, who was Southern, used to say, sometimes I think, well, and sometimes I just don't know. And the most profound thing anybody could ever say. That's fucking beginner's mind. Like, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I love it. My English teacher, Kevin Murray, at Lexington High School, gave us a lesson. And this was one of those aha moments. I'm a freshman. Mm-hmm. And he goes, which one of these is a better example of clear communication or good communication? Mm-hmm. And I still remember the example. The first one I can't quite do, but he goes, the speedometer on my blah, blah, blah. Like he says all these watch terms. Mm-hmm. Blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, me and Bill going fish tomorrow, don't rain. And I was like, well, obviously,
Yeah. It's
the first one. Mr. Murray, I got this one. The first one is good communication. Uh-huh. And that was a nice, humbling moment.
Mm-hmm.
Can't really remember why I brought that guy up.
But also, you mean Mr. Murray?
No, the guy at the retreat. I guess it was just like, I'm with you. But also in defense, this is boring. I'm bored. I hate this.
Well, I think you have shared that, the Mr. Murray thing, and I probably shared this, but I remember my favorite teacher, who in hindsight, I mean, he was an old man. So like there, I'm sure were some things that were overlooked as far as teaching in like a, you know, more woke way. But
yeah.
He... Mr. Miller, it's very close to Mr. Murray. His name was Steve Miller, like Steve Miller Band. Anyway, he was my freshman English teacher, and we sat down on the first day of school, and he had on the board written, mean to, don't pick no cotton. It's so similar.
Mean to, no pick.
Mean to, like in quotes, don't pick no cotton. But he might not have had it in quotes. It was like supposed to be intentionally kind of confusing, and we were going to like... analyze it to get to what it means.
I don't get the mean to part.
So this is how we felt.
You don't have to. Yeah, but I don't like the way this is making me feel.
Okay, well, then you're experiencing
mean
what he
to,
wanted.
No pick, no cotton.
So mean to, don't pick no cotton. And so we were all like, and he was like, does anybody know what this means? And it was silent, and we were all like scared, the freshmen are like, oh no. And then we like analyzed it and what it means is like, mean to, like I meant to, doesn't do the trick, is the white way of saying it. Like, so mean to, don't pick no cotton is like, and I think it's from something that I don't know. I can't remember. Mm. But it's like, it doesn't get the job done. If you meant to, it doesn't matter. The job isn't done. Like, so your
intentions. Why is it in parentheses?
So your intentions, it's not in parentheses. It's in quotes. Quotations. Mean to, saying like, I meant to, doesn't get the job done.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I thought for some reason mean to was in parentheses. So I was like breaking it down.
Maybe I said parentheses.
Almost mathematically. Quotes. The whole thing is in quotes.
Yeah.
But it said mean to, no pick, no cotton.
Mean to, don't pick, no cotton. Yeah.
Yeah, now I get it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, I get it.
So we had this whole, and it's like memorable because you go from being so confused, like, I don't understand what this is.
No, I love it. Yeah, that's it. And me and Bill going fish tomorrow, don't rain.
Yeah.
I'm like, fucking great.
Yeah. And I wish, I'd like to think that part of that lesson was like, this is as equally valuable a way of communicating as anything,
but
I don't know if it was. I think
So this brings me to what I was kind of trying to say. I remember what I was going to say about that guy is he said at one point, he was like, and when we were in the meditation, it upset in me. And it's just really funny when people like, I'm like, it's wrong. In fact, from where I was calling the game, I was like, he was wrong a bunch. And I was just going like, just say, I felt upset during the meditation. Like, it upset in me or all these things. And I was like.
And he said all of that after he said he was a linguophile.
Yes.
You're asking for it if you say that, because then your speech better be.
Immaculate. Yeah. But it was here's in defense of speaking. I think everything we do, including even how we dress ourselves or how we do or don't clean our hair or whatever it might be, is an indication of thoughtfulness. And I think thoughtfulness is an extension of how measured are you,
mm-hmm.
and how deliberate are you. That's just another way of saying measured, but like trace it all the way back, like how conscious are you, like how well is it, like, so I told you that I've been alone a lot shooting the movie in Winnipeg. And I got stoned one night, and I noticed that sometimes when you get stoned, you get a good look at all these different voices that are sort of seats on your council. Mm-hmm. And one of them shows up and is like, I don't even remember what he was saying, but it was very basic. It was like, you're a fraud. Like, you're an idiot. Like, you don't care about anybody. You don't even care about this or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And when I'm stoned, I'd just go, shh, 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 no, no, no. And like, literally like, send them back down to the depths of hell from where they came. Or like, I was joking that, you know, I was watching The Simpsons to like laugh. And then there's an episode where Ned Flanders is trying to date because his wife is dead. And I'm like, no, 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 no. Like, and they're just like, since your wife died. And I'm like, ah, oh, no, 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 no. Like you, because weed can make you fixate. And yeah. I'm like, don't fixate on that. So what are we talking about? We're talking about the mind, or you could say awareness, but let's just say your mind. Your mind's ability to self-govern, meaning which of these voices am I going to encourage and which am I going to shush down? And that governance bleeds out into behavior. It even bleeds out into posture. Like, why do we, a cop has good posture. A cop's a bad example. It's such a sticky wicket. But like a politician would have good posture and a clean suit and nice hair. They're trying to say, look, I govern myself well.
Right.
I can govern you. Like the Big Lebowski couldn't, I mean, he could because he's so beloved, but somebody that looked like that, you'd be like, this guy can't even get out of his robe and it's 4 p.m.
That's interesting.
I'm going to stick the landing here. Language is a way, and being polite, see, I've learned it's not polity. Being polite is a way of indicating to someone, I'm in my right mind. So if I come up and say, the fucking gas pump isn't working, it's coming out like a little trickle of piss.
Yeah.
Okay, this person is unregulated, untrustworthy, dangerous.
Yeah.
Same person, same problem. Good afternoon. I'm sorry to bother you. These are all indications that I am under control and you can trust and merge with me, which is what, now we're really getting off the rails, but like what makes a sociopath so troubling is because they can mimic someone who's well-governed and on the inside they're Heath Ledger's the Joker.
Totally. That's really interesting because I wonder and bet that that is not only, it definitely seems like that is a cultural idea and it's like, you know, a little bit.
You mean American?
Yes. I mean Western. I think that that's maybe what we decided is like a very, you know, and probably like around the Victorian times. I don't know if I have that right.
It's like
a very, you know, like there is civilization and this is how civilized people speak and act.
But those are all reflections of what it's like to be civilized on the inside. Like, that's why it's like, look, I've put on this wig and I've wore this very clean garment. You're trying to indicate that you're well run.
But does well run mean you don't feel anger? You're not in touch with your shadow. You don't have an animal side. You don't want sex. You're not horny.
Well, this is why, like, look at how you can show that in your look. You know what I mean?
Right.
Arguably, that's my look. Is like I wear clothes that have stains on them. I'll go in, I'm not trying to brag, but I will go on stage with like just like a white stain down, that shouldn't have said white, right down the front of my pants. And I'm just like, and I come on stage, I'm a little winded and a little sweaty. Oh, I'm sorry, it's just in the handicap restroom because it's a one-seater. Don't overanalyze that.
Oh my God.
So, but I'm saying like there are cues. I was just getting on the airplane coming home yesterday and I was looking at this woman and, you know, she was probably in her 60s and she had like this really wild, almost like Cruella de Vil style haircut. And I was like, look at you. Like it was dyed. She looked like a skunk. And I was like, okay, you're trying to tell me about your inner reality, which is like, I'm together.
Yeah.
Like it's not like the real punk rock thing to do is like color your hair with a magic marker or like it's bleached and it's grown out. And you're saying like, I'm fucking in touch with my wild side. Like I'm real. This woman wasn't that, but she was saying like, I'm kind of funky. And then I looked down at her jacket and I guess it was like a long cardigan and it had like all this like fake graffiti on it, and I'm reading it, and it one of them was just like a one-way sign, and one of them just said like, I think it just said rock and roll, and I'm just like, so in that moment, I believe it or not, I actually wasn't judging her. That sounds like something I would judge real hard, but I was just kind of like, isn't it funny that that's just one of the choices you can take off the rack at a fucking whatever the fuck,
right,
like at a normal like, store.
Because it's representing your insides and you're like, yeah, we, but somebody else made but also, it. And so,
that's what I'm saying is like, what I liked when I was a punk rock person was like, you'd write whatever you wanted to write on your jacket.
Right.
You know what I mean? You wouldn't just buy a pre-made someone else's dumb idea of wildness sewn in some third world country and shipped to a Target and sold to you for $12.95. Sure. And you're like, look, I'm fucking, but I'm also.
But also the idea to write your own thing on a jacket was sold to you and you were part of the group that did that.
Welcome to the conversation. Where have you been? I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. No, I completely agree.
I do. Going back to the like cultural thing, I understand what you're saying and I certainly take comfort in it in that way. But I think it can be, I would imagine cultures where they, even the ones that I, like my Italian friend and my Basque sister-in-law, find it incredibly unnerving when people are always composed and communicating in this way, who they know have yeah. pent up anger. It's like the wasp thing. And it's like, feels like Stepford Wifey robot. Like you can't trust it. You never know how somebody actually feels.
I agree.
Because it's not. So we did have
agree.
This idea of you're like, be well spoken, be well mannered. Don't go too deep into yes. your personal stuff, you know? And like,
yeah.
And so
I was, yes.
Yeah. I just think that their language for sure is how we control how people see our inner world. Or it can be how you communicate your inner world, but more often than not, it's how we.
Okay, I see. I was sort of disagreeing with you when you were saying that's a Western thing, but then now I'm coming around on it because there are situations and groups, take a biker gang, where being like, pardon me, gentlemen, but I can't help but notice there's a scrape on my car that perfectly aligns with the handbrake on your motorbike
yeah.
is not correct
right.
either.
Right.
So there's all these like, in that situation, that's unsafe because you sound like a narc or something.
Yeah.
So you have to adapt and change it all the time. I was going to tell you, when you and I grew up similarly and when I was an evangelical and pretty much a fundamentalist evangelical, I had a conversation recently where I remembered the games that I was playing when I was an evangelical. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that I would sort of tolerate things, mm-hmm. but like really I was like not about it. Anyway, mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting conversation. We were talking, and it was a great conversation, and the person I was talking to is very thoughtful, and we had a wonderful chat. So this isn't me.
Who are we on now? Who were you having a conversation with?
Well, I'm not saying.
Oh, okay.
But I'm also just saying in case they heard it, I enjoyed this conversation.
Okay, you're doing all the pop-ups before. Got it. You did a pop-up on my conversation this morning at coffee. Yeah, like because I was telling Jen about yeah. what Leela said and you interrupted to be like, but just so you know, tell the other side. And I was like, you don't
want
have
you
to
misrepresent
do all these
girl.
All these prefaces beforehand.
No, that's fair. That's fair. Oh, I didn't finish the dream. So I'm looking in the drawers. Don't worry. I'm going to get I won't forget the conversation. We're looking through the drawers and it's photos of you and me and Leela. Mm-hmm. Like all these personal photographs. And then there are all these writings and like documents, like not this, but like birth certificates and social security cards. And like, and then all the drawers were just like easy to open. And there were lamps and stuff. And I'm like turning them off because I'm like, it could rain. Like, what is going on here? Mm. And then I went in the house and the dream kind of went in a different direction from there. But I was like, what was that? And I was like, oh, that's what it's like being on social media and having a podcast and sharing your life all the time. We just have a desk that we leave outside with photos of our most intimate moments.
That's true.
And I was like, anyone can come and look at this?
I know.
I was like, it's weirder. What's weird is that we don't have that dream
constantly.
I know.
My unconscious was trying to be like, it's pretty weird, isn't it?
I go back and forth about it too, because, you know, so many people, like so many of our public friends don't post pictures of their kid. And like, I think that's so, makes so much sense and is maybe even correct. And then like, you know, I posted a video of me cutting my bangs and crying about it. Like there's like, we're really letting people in. I'll post videos of us in like some of our most intimate moments where we're like in our pajamas and you're making me laugh, or we're like doing the singing game or whatever.
Yeah.
But, and so I have to look at the compulsion to do that. But I think going back to what you were saying about church, being raised in church, and especially being the pastor's kid, like so much of my life, even kind of unknowing to my parents, meaning like indirectly, like they weren't necessarily realizing that they were doing this to us, but was about perception, how things are perceived. And I think that happens not just to the pastors.
It's like, agree.
If you're agreeing to be a part of this community where we're trying to be as wholesome as possible.
This goes right into what I was going to talk about.
It goes, it's like, it's so much more about how things look to the outside than it is about what's actually happening on the inside.
Speed agree.
And so it's very healing for both of us to be like, I'm just showing you my whole life. This is what it is.
It's a correction. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're really reminding me, you know, there's that expression, the fruits of the spirit. Like you're judged by like what kind of fruit you grow on your tree, meaning like what comes out of you just sort of naturally, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I was like, to me, the feel, and I'm not speaking for all church going folks. I'm just saying for me, it was a game of faking it, like pretending you had been converted, basically. Mm-hmm. And by the way, there's this in the New Age movement as well. We go on retreats and everyone's 100%. Like, hello, you know? So like people be faking and that's fine.
People. Yeah.
But like that leads into the conversation I had, which was somebody asked me very generously. They were like, if you believe, like if you love Jesus, why don't you consider yourself a Christian? And I hadn't been asked that ever directly. And I really unpacked it, I think, quite nicely. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go pee and we'll do the mid-rolls. And when I come back, I really am excited to talk to you about this.
What your answer was.
And I want to talk a little bit about I had a really weird night where like something like almost was like channeled through me. And I wrote something very, very quickly that I really, really like. And I want to talk about that happening.
Oh, stay tuned.
We'll be right back after this urination. Pardon the interruption, weirdos. This episode is brought to us by our friends at Armra. You guys know I am obsessed with ways to strengthen my immunity, my gut health, as well as my fitness, endurance, and my metabolism, as well as my hair and my skin's radiance. And I recently discovered one product that does all of that, and it couldn't be easier to incorporate into my life. I'm talking about Armra Colostrum. Colostrum is one of those things that keeps coming up in conversation with my friends. What is it? Colostrum is the first nutrition we receive in life and contains all of the essential nutrients our bodies need to thrive. I'm talking about reactivating hair growth and glowing skin by reducing inflammation and puffiness in your face and neck, as well as stimulating stem cells to produce collagen and increase elasticity. Talking about igniting your metabolism and fortifying gut health so you feel less bloated and lighter in general, while replenishing your microbiome, stabilizing blood sugar, and accelerating fat burning, as well as fueling your fitness performance and your recovery. Armra Colostrum is a proprietary concentrate of bovine colostrum that harnesses over 400 living bioactive nutrients that rebuild the barriers of your body and fuel cellular health for a host of research-backed health benefits. It's wholly natural, sustainable, and was developed with the highest integrity, talking about grass-fed in the United States, and they guarantee the highest potency and bioavailability of any colostrum on the market for results that you can actually see and feel, and I can attest to that. I add it to my smoothie. You don't even notice, but you notice the feeling, meaning you don't notice it in the smoothie, but the results are
palpable. So we've worked out a special offer for weirdos. Receive 15% off your first order. Go to tryarmra.com/weird or enter weird to get 15% off your first order. That's tryarmra.com/weird. We're also brought to us by our friends. Of course I'm wearing them, YouTubies. The Perfect Jean. Guys, I love the Perfect Jean in a nutshell. It's a stretchy jean that no one needs to know, meaning it looks as good as any designer jean that I've paid way too much for. I've worn it to movie premieres. I've worn it on late night. I never don't wear them, but the secret is 2% spandex and 2.5% rayon for extra comfort, meaning they're as comfortable as pajama pants. In fact, I have slept in them. They are that comfortable. They're also the best looking. I love the dyes. I love the colors. They have a new khaki dye that I really, really love. I'm wearing this very dark sort of midnight blue one, which goes with everything. They're also incredibly, incredibly well made. I never have to replace them. They don't tear. They don't rip. Things don't pop off. They are awesome, high-end, maximum durable, and they spare your nuts because they give you that stretch you need for that comfort in your man zone. So your nuts ain't crushed, whether you're working with a lemon or a lentil, a three-leaf clover, a big old hunk and eggplant, the Perfect Jean has you covered. I absolutely love them. They also have incredible t-shirts. Just check them out. It's a great company and a great product, and everything they make is so, so comfortable and looks incredible. ThePerfectJean.nyc, that's www.theperfectjean.nyc. Did I say that? ThePerfectJean.nyc. Use code WEIRDO for 20% off at checkout. That's a great discount. WEIRDO at checkout for 20% off.
All right, we're back. Great success.
Did you guys sing Jesus, Lover of My Soul in your church?
Jesus, Lover of my soul, Jesus,
that's the Beatles. I will never let you go. Yeah. Okay, now sing this part. You've taken me
to the higher plane.
Was that what it was?
I think so. Set me up upon the rock.
Okay.
And now I know.
We sang it as, you've taken me from the miry clay.
Miry clay.
Or maybe it was mire and clay, but we said mire, but I said miry, and that's not a word.
Miry, the mire-ish clay, which upset in me a very obtuse feeling. Folding it all in. Anyway, I think this is interesting, but it really came down to a couple things, one of which is who cares what you believe? That's a big one for me.
Sure.
Whereas when I was in the church, it was all about what you believe and like what you say, like what you like say happened and is real. And because he was saying, do you believe in the resurrection? And I was like, that's just not really on my list of important things. Like what I, because I go, you can believe it or not believe it, but it really just matters. And I kept going like, it's all just right now. It's just this moment. Like, if the devotion to the thought that a man physically conquered death transforms you right now, then follow that path and stay on it, because that's getting you to the place, to the recognition of yourself and your safety as God's child. But I was like, the thought, and I hadn't thought about this in a long time, that we die and our brains are scanned like UPC codes at the grocery store, and then something comes up on the computer. Does believe resurrection, does believe virgin birth, does believe sinless life, does believe whatever it is, did go to church, whatever it is, did pray for forgiveness, did ask Jesus to come into your heart, all these like this checklist.
It's like
stuff.
Admin. We get obsessed with the admin of it.
Like you're going to go to the DMV
and
in
have
the
to
sky.
Prove you have your documents to prove.
And
yeah.
I had a moment of gratitude that I was like, I'm just grateful to not be in that mindset anymore because I didn't like it. I was like, is this right? And you and I have talked about asking Jesus into our heart dozens and dozens of times just to make sure it was sticking.
Yeah.
But this I think is even more interesting, is, and Richard Rohr helped me with this too, is it all about
it all comes. The reason I don't identify as a Christian in the way that we think about Christians is atonement theory, which is the idea that we need a blood sacrifice, which you tell me if you agree with this. That is one of those ideas that if it wasn't like given to you and reinforced for the first couple decades of your life, when you just look at it, you're like, that is a really wacky, with respect, kind of idea that God, the singularity, the essential infinite point of reality, just behind, within, and throughout this moment and every moment is like a debt collector that's like, well, you fucked up and somebody has to die. I'm like, like the mafia?
Yeah.
Like, where are we getting this? Like, so, and I was very pleased with myself that I was like, to me, it's all about the prodigal son. Everybody knows I love the story of the prodigal son, but here's my new point that I've never made about the prodigal son. Everybody knows the son asks the father for his inheritance, goes into the world, squanders it. It's sort of implied that it's on women and alcohol, loses it all, and ends up working with the pigs, which I always say for a Jewish man was like a way of saying the lowest of the low. He's disgraced. He's an outcast. And then when he's basically at death's door, he goes, he remembers that he is the man. He's not a king, but it's fun to call him a king. That he's the king's son. And if I go back, he'll have mercy on me and maybe make me a servant in his big house, his kingdom. And he goes back. And of course, the punchline we all love, the father's not mad, makes no mention of him squandering or wasting or philandering or drinking or whatever he did, working with pigs. There's no, the king, the father doesn't even acknowledge that that happened and welcomes him, throws a huge party, gives him a ring on his finger and new sandals on his feet and a new robe and slaughters the fattened calf, which is like, we're having a banger, right? That's the story. There's another part, there's sort of a, there's a epilogue to it, but that's basically the story. And I was, in real time, I came up with this because I haven't been thinking about if I believe that that is the gospel. And I summarize it by saying, dad's not mad. Dad's not mad. We think dad's mad. Dad's not mad. I was like, you'll notice in the story, Jesus's closer, as I've called it a million times, meaning you ask any, the most rigorous historian of the gospels, they all agree that the prodigal son was the most authentic, identifiably accurate, whatever. So you'll notice in that story, which is Jesus's big thing, his big finale, there's no Jesus character in the story as we've come to understand him. Meaning, traditional Christianity, the way I was raised, the prodigal son would go like this. I ask my father for my inheritance. I go into the wilderness. I squander it on booze and women and everything. I'm at the lowest of the low. I'm working with pigs. Then a kind stranger comes to me and says, let's return to your father. I'll let him torture me. I'll let him kill me. Even though you fucked up, I'll say, please, sir, you're a merciful father. Murder me and you can live. That would be the atonement theory. But what happens is, the son doesn't believe anything new. He doesn't come to a realization. He recognizes, he remembers, he recognizes what was always and already true, which is that he's the father's son. He just remembers, wait, I'm the son to a powerful and wealthy and loving father. So it's not a new belief and it's not a repentance and it's not a scapegoating of the blame. It's just, I forgot.
Right.
I'm my father's son. And I was like, to me, conversion isn't believing, repenting even in the way that we've come to understand it. It's just remembering, wait, I'm God's child.
Yeah.
And I can go home. And he won't be mad. And it'll be even better. I'll think maybe I'll have mercy and make me a servant. He doesn't. He makes me, and he says, the punchline, the father says, you are always with me and everything I have is yours. So the father doesn't even acknowledge that he left. He's like, I was as with you there as you are with me now in the walls of the kingdom. And I was like, that's the good news. And Richard Rohr helped me understand that the atonement theory and this leaning into the idea of a blood sacrifice and like a debt needing to be paid only got the volume turned up on it theologically. I think it's 1054, which is one of those Constantinople, oh, Nicaea things. And there's a split in the church. And I'm going to butcher some of these facts, but like Eastern Orthodox doesn't acknowledge
emphasize it.
It doesn't emphasize it at all. There's no, to me, I'm like, that is the good news. And do you understand what I'm saying with the sort of, I don't want to say perverse or like inciting words. I'm just saying like, it's a very strange idea that we're like, God is mad and he will accept someone else's torture and death on my stead, even though I deserve it. Mm-hmm. And I tried to make the point. I was like, I think that has more to do with the fact that we're human and there's all of this like innate, like I shit, you come out of your mother's vagina on blood. And I'm not trying to be funny here. I'm just saying like, there's a lot of like, gross and kind of shameful things about just being alive, pooping and farting.
You know what's funny about that is I think actually Christian culture is where we started thinking that those things were shameful because we started thinking that the body was gross and bad and
dirty.
That's fair.
I can't trace that back. Here's my final point. I'm going to give it to you for the rest of the episode. Absolutely not true. Richard says, Jesus didn't die to change God's mind about us. Mm-hmm. He died to change our mind about God. And I would even take that into a Ram Dassi place saying like, Jesus was demonstrating that when you know who you are, even death isn't frightening.
Yes.
Because you know you can't be destroyed.
Yeah.
And you know that the people, quote unquote, destroying you are also you. And it's all okay. Forgive them. They don't know what they do. Forgive them. They don't know who they are is another way to put it. But I will die because what? Everybody's so obsessed with your death. This is a person living outside of time. Mm-hmm. This is a person living outside of the idea that like a good life. And if I was 98 years old and eating a strawberry shortcake and died on a deathbed surrounded by my loved ones, that's a good death. And a crucifixion is a bad death. He's just like, what are you talking about? All of this living, dying isn't who we are. And we need to recognize and go back to the Father, go back to the loving Father.
I think so. And what I like to think, and really that's like all this is what I like to think or what you like to think. That's like what beliefs are. Meaning
it's interesting.
I can hear my background or people saying like, well, it's not about what you like to think, it's the truth. And it's like, well, that's what you like to think. so this is what we're going. But what is the valuable way of thinking of atonement and all of that for me? Because I remember being a child and hearing like God, like Jesus sacrificed his life for you. That's how much he loved you. And feeling like, whew, like such a swell.
I know, I mention it all the time.
Of love.
Oh. Like, you liked it.
Yeah. And I did also feel like, and it was like, because you're a sinner. And I'm like, I just got here.
Well, I mention it constantly, but Joe DeRosa has the best bit where he goes, people are like, you got to believe in Jesus. He died for your sins. I never asked him to.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was so funny.
That's right. So they did have that underbelly. But I also remember, because I didn't have the same thing where I felt like I had to pretend to believe, like I was totally bought in. And a big part of that was because my parents and our community did include the heart space. And this is what it was like coming to me as you were saying that. I'm like, it really is. Often in church, or at least in my church experience, it was like the head and the heart's narrative of God and Jesus at war. So the way that our brains work is the like tallying admin, like you're in, you're out, who's in, who's out, who's it, like where am I, where do I stand, where is this, trying to control all of these really heavy, deep, hard things. And then the heart goes in and is like, there's grace though. So it covers all. Like God loves you unconditionally and there's so much flow and space. But then, and so the heart is, in my opinion, what I like to think, 100% correct. The head is scrambling to try and make sure that it's not going to hell, because once you put the threat of hell into something, your brain takes over because it's terrified. And it's like, all right, well, then how do I know for sure that I'm not going to hell? Because that sounds terrible.
Yes.
But the heart is like, there's space for all of it. It's covered. Like I said, it's covered by the love of God.
Yeah.
So I had enough heart space in my upbringing that I definitely got messed up by the head stuff, but the heart sort of is my touchstone back in. Yeah. So all of that is to say, the way that is helpful for me now to think about like the story of the crucifixion and resurrection is that God came down. I'm still into that. God came in a human form, which guess what? So are all of us, God yeah. in human form,
yeah.
but in this like divine way that we could really see it, and spoke to the people of that time in a way that they would understand love. So they already were sacrificing animals. So that's how they understood. They understood sacrifice in the form of like murdering an innocent thing.
Using the vocabulary of the time.
It was using the vocabulary of the time, like murdering an innocent lamb.
What would he do now?
Exactly. I think he would do something completely different. It wasn't about what it was. It was communicating
You're
away.
A little genius, aren't you? This is beautiful.
It's just, and then that makes me experience, it's like God wanted us to remember the ultimate truth, the thing behind everything is this profound, like deafening love that
right.
is the only thing that you hear yeah. and feel and experience because it's so big.
Yeah.
And how do I do that to these people at this time and this moment in time?
Yeah.
And so like, and then that helps me access the love again. And the resurrection is what happens when we remember love, even in the smallest thing. So when like a couple fighting, when you have been fighting this fight for 20 years and you're like, how are we still arguing about this one thing and you won't budge and I won't budge. And the first person who like reaches out a hand and says like, look, I love you. Mm. I don't care what I'll drop it. Like, I just want to be with you.
You hear stories like that in divorces where they're like, just take whatever you want.
Yeah. And like even that little act of love, something died and something is being resurrected. Yeah. Yeah. We are resurrected every time we remember love.
Right. We're resurrected every moment.
That's true.
Yeah.
But that's
really beautiful, Val. Yeah. That was another, when I say sticking point, it was just something that me and this very compassionate, thoughtful person agreed we differed on, mm-hmm. which is I was like, I think God didn't come down into the world. God already is the world.
Mm-hmm.
What else could it be?
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus recognized, like the prodigal son, wait, I know my dad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go back. I know my source. So mm-hmm. I and the Father are one. Dad's not mad. You are always with me. Everything I have is yours. I'm just going to go home mm-hmm. before I die. I'm going to go home. But then I was like, and he was like, okay, yeah, we were all on that. And I was like, but I believe other people have done that. And I think that's our charge to do as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not get our passes stamped to go into some eternal afterlife.
Yeah.
That remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
What the afterlife, I think that's ineffable. It's mm-hmm. not something for us to talk about. We're doing the best we can here. But I was like, have you heard the expression? Josh Radner told me this one. I forget who said it, but he goes, I believe Jesus Christ is the one and only Son of God. And so am I, and so are you.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think, like, what are we doing? It's like when I asked Rob Bell, I was like, what do you think Jesus would say if he came back? And he said, why are you guys still talking about me?
Yeah.
Because there's a certain kind of scapegoating, not of guilt and shame and sin, but there's even a scapegoating of like, well, he did it. Well, he remembered God. He remembered himself. He became love. He forgave. And it's like, I think we're, and again, you know, I can only do this for stretches if you want to get the mind back into it, be mm-hmm. compassionate, be forgiving, be loving. But like, it's just this moment. Yeah. And I even said to him, I was like, if you thinking Jesus was the only one, if that's getting you, if that's converting you, fucking go for it. I'm so happy for you. And I go, that's kind of romantic. And
well,
I didn't mean like
100% the way of the feminine mystic.
Yes, fall in love.
It's use whoever, and it doesn't have to just be one, but if it is just one, then great.
Yeah.
And use whoever you need to literally like fall, like imagining your arms are open and your trust falling backwards into love. Yeah. And that's conversion. Like merge with love, that guru, that God, so much that you merge into each other and you remember there is no separation.
You remember.
You remember.
Like a member on a body.
That's right.
Absolutely. The catch, why I don't, again, so why am I not just a Christian, is then if it's only Jesus, that path becomes very hard for me when you start going, well, what about the billions of people that don't believe that? And then when you start throwing them into a furnace, yeah. I go, this doesn't work for me anymore.
Absolutely. And that's why, yeah, if you ask why I'm not a Christian, I would say it has more to do with what Christianity, the position it takes on what other people should believe.
Yeah.
Because I really think it's gorgeous and so uniquely human that we need all kinds of different ways of getting there.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a flaw. I think that's a beautiful tapestry that is not even close to a problem. It's beautiful. It's stunning.
This is sort of, I don't know if I'm using this right, but it upset in me a postmodern. I'm just kidding.
It upset in me.
It upset in me. I don't know. I'll just say this is a very modern conversation. Mm-hmm. I was reading something recently about like we're sort of living in a Tower of Babel time, mm-hmm. meaning the exchange of information is so great, and that's where the burden, meaning just the task, comes in to make these greater global considerations, mm. meaning when we were children and we were just in a little village in that way, it was beautiful to fall in love with Jesus in that way. Mm. And the specialness of him and the devotion to that idea was working for me. Mm-hmm. But we do live in a world where there's just so much exchange.
Yeah.
So I'm like, there was probably a time where that would have worked. And now we're living in a time where I'm like, we're asking bigger questions.
Well, that's right. I was actually thinking of it in terms of spiral dynamics, which I don't know a ton about, but that's also a Richard Rohr
and Rob love that
thing. And there, because I remember Richie saying that there's actually an argument to be had about children being raised in a religion because they think in a very black and white way.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. I think that makes sense, but you also have to be really careful because they think in a black and white way. If you tell them they're going to hell, that's all they're going to be thinking about because that's terrifying.
The demons can press their face on the window, Val.
Yeah. And that's like my brother's telling my mom, like, hell was such a horrible thing for me to like get over. And my mom was like, really? I'm surprised we didn't talk about it that much. And I'm like, yeah, you really only have to mention it once.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she was thinking of it from a grown-up, nuanced way where she could consider all the nuances, and children can't do that.
That brings me to my next kind of part of that conversation was I was like, what sin is and what hell is and what evil is and all that sort of stuff. And I was like, I had never put it together like this before. But for me, sin is like forgetting, right? Mm-hmm. And the behavior that I'm going to say begets, that forgetting our shared identity as one is often selfish, bad. Like look at like lust, like I guess you could call it unhealthy sex in quotes, is like very like separate. It's not mergy at all. It's very like transactional, usey sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But that can be anything. You can make someone's sandwich in a way that is very like forgetting and so then I was like, to me, this is weird, but I was like, saying I am a sinner is a sin in the sense that you're saying like, if sin is forgetting that you are included in the party, then saying I am a sinner is a sin.
Right. You're saying you're identifying with the part of you that has forgotten.
Right. That's at a very high altitude. Of course we have flaws and things we regret doing, hurting feelings, making things, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying like this ultimate source of reality, of course, would be above that. Yeah. Well, we've always made this point. It's like, I've wanted to do a joke about it and I'm working on it. But it's like, let's say someone cheats on their girlfriend mm-hmm. and they feel really, really bad about it. And the girlfriend, of course, breaks up with them. But then, like, I go to a beer with this guy mm-hmm. and over a 6-hour conversation, he starts telling, this kind of goes back to Alain de Botton. Bouton.
Alain de Botton.
I don't know if that's even how you say it.
No, I don't.
But the therapist we were talking about last week, it's like, I sit down with him and we talk for 6 hours mm-hmm. and we start getting at like these ideas. The dynamics with his family was if he loved his mother, let's say, a lot, that was unsafe. Mm. So he became what we call anxious avoidant, mm-hmm. which means love actually isn't safe to him. But we really get into that. He breaks down all the vulnerability of why he has a mechanism that served him in his youth. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think I need to leave and be a grown up. So I need to like sever this unhealthy codependent relationship in some way so that I can be free and become mm-hmm. my own person. And then unfortunately that festers and mutates and becomes a person mm-hmm. through other series of traumas. And I mean, real traumas that now when things get too close, you start, the protector in you starts getting afraid mm-hmm. that you're going to disappear. You're going to die. They're going to kill you. It's a black widow. They're mm-hmm. going to, it's a praying mantis. As soon as you mate, they're going to cut your head off. And now you're getting very scared and you're not even ready to like look in that box. It's annihilation.
Yeah.
So instead you cheat on your girlfriend knowing she'll break up with you and now you're free. Mm-hmm. And your protector did the thing that yeah. it's assigned to do. It just doesn't have good techniques yet, meaning that was hurtful. Right. If that's how you were feeling in a perfect world, you could tell them all of these things and say like, I just want you to know I'm getting very nervous. Like I'm losing myself. I'm scared mm-hmm. of intimacy. I'm scared of commitment. I think we're going to get married. Then we're going to have kids. And I'm afraid I'm going to be a bad father and hurt my kids the way that I was hurt because I still have all this gunk. And you know, when I'm falling asleep at night, the thoughts that come are would terrify you or whatever it is. But most people can't do that. So you cheat mm-hmm. and then it ends. And then you're in the clear and the protector is like, see, stick with me. Now, so over that 6 hour beer, we're really nursing it. I then understand the cheating person and see myself in them and of course forgive
yeah.
because I understand.
Yeah.
And then I was like, but, and then the punchline that I'm working on is like, so your best friend Fred can understand you, but mm-hmm. God is still like, oh, you fucked up, dude.
Right.
I was like, have a God that's better than your best friend Fred.
Right.
Like, and there's yeah. a quote, I forget who said it, but I think it's the Sufi said, an all-knowing God is an all-forgiving God. Of course. Mm-hmm. Like unforgiveness, like all of our attempts at forgiveness is attempts at understanding. Mm-hmm. And even if you take the most sociopathic murdering person, mm-hmm. well, look at what's happening with like brain science and mental illness. You know, like Chris and I were talking about this morning. It's like, we've gotten there with alcoholism. Mm. You know, you're like, well, you have an addiction, like yeah. that you have a disease. Uh-huh. But then like mental illness takes all these different shapes and then it gets too shaky and there's no accountability. And I'm not saying we should let murdering people walk amongst us, but there needs to be, I think that's for God to be like, I understand all of it. It's another yeah. version of if I were them, I'd be them. Meaning if I was a sociopathic killer, I'd be a sociopathic killer
yeah.
because I'd have their brain chemistry. I'd have their experiences. I'd who knows how many ways I was made unwell or born unwell or whatever it is mm-hmm. that led to that behavior making a whole lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just,
yeah.
it's hard to talk about. Even as I'm talking about it, I have all these pop-ups going like, of course I'm not for murder. You know what I mean? Because it's too much. But then I go, great. I don't even have to.
Yeah.
We'll keep doing the best we can, but I can have the divine imagination of a God that can.
Absolutely. And that is Jack Kornfield and Tara Brach talk so well about forgiveness. And because, you know, it's if somebody has really wounded you, and maybe it's like the biggest wound of your life, you're like, how can I forgive when this wound still exists? You know, like those are like the toughest.
Mm.
And if they're not sorry, they've never apologized. Like all of that is so tough to forgive.
Yeah.
And they taught me like first have to forgive yourself for not being able to forgive.
That's very coarse.
And then you get into and the way that you do that is by going, isn't it beautiful that I want to forgive, that I even want to?
Wow.
You know, it's like such an easy way to access compassion for yourself.
Jack Kornfield is like butter on toast.
Oh my God. He is such a gift.
He's just like waking up in a Vermont bed and breakfast and there's just butter.
I know. And jam. And like it comes to you in a tray.
Crusty bread, and you're like, what is this?
And like tea with milk. But I wanted to add to that.
Yes, of course, tea with milk. You really are picturing exactly what I'm picturing.
I know exactly what you mean with a little vase and a flower. Absolutely. But that's what you're saying about like imagining a divine God that can forgive. That's also what Tara, I think, would say is leaning on something bigger than yourself to be able to do this thing. And our friend Jen does it so well. She's always reminding me, just through example, to like ask God for help. And I know that's not going to be everybody's jam, but for me,
or a cup of tea,
yeah, with milk in it. For me, that is so helpful. It's like remembering that you are part of something bigger, and using the strength and the example of that bigger thing.
I love this
To funnel it into your one experience.
This goes back to what we were talking about earlier about the signals you can have that you're governing yourself well or whatever. There's a meaning, there's two choices inside of us. There's more than that.
Yeah.
But I am drawn to this idea that one of the things from A Course in Miracles that I say all the time is, I can't, you can, I resign as my own teacher. Meaning, there is a beingness, a naked eternal energy that I am, within which everything that I think I am appears and is known. And I resign. I just say it all the time. I go, I resign as my own teacher. Mm-hmm. I told you I was flying in yesterday. It was brutal. My pickup was 3 a.m. It's 1 3-hour flight, you know, checking in, waiting at the airport. I don't have to tell everybody how tiring traveling is. Two flights, 2 3.5-hour flights. I had to poop the whole time. I hadn't had any coffee and I hadn't really had any like good food, like just filling food. So I'm like hungry. I really have to take a shit. I'm very, very tired. And my poor body is so exhausted and aching and like plain sleep and ugh. And then I'm at a Starbucks at LAX and I'm ordering a drink and I'm like, there's like two people ahead of me at Starbucks. I'm like, this will take 5 minutes. It takes like 10, 15 minutes. I'm like watching them make other drinks. Mm-hmm. And in this moment, I'm just like the worst person in my mind. And I came home and I told you about it. I was just like, not just projected at the baristas, because, you know, it wasn't logical like that. Mm-hmm. It was just this dark, like diarrhea waterfall between me and the world. Yeah. I was seeing through the veil of diarrhea waterfall.
Yeah.
And everyone I saw was unsafe, inept, hurtful, wrong, violent, greedy. We don't see the world, we see ourselves. We don't see the world as it is. We see it as we are.
Yeah.
And in that moment, those are humbling moments. And later I was grateful for it. I told you that in that moment, I was like, you've done no growing. It's like that voice shows up. It's like, look at you. Mm. You're always one poop on deck and no coffee away from hating the world.
Mm.
And then you just go, I resign as my own teacher. The guy that needs to poop and the guy that needs coffee and the guy that doesn't like being hauled around the country like a bag of lumber.
Beans.
Like a bag of beans. Thank you. There's no bags of lumber. We got to bag this lumber. He can't.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
And that's why I was like, so talking to the guy about Christianity, I was like, we're so close. I really felt close.
Yeah.
Like I was like, we're saying a lot of similar things. And just to put a pin in it, I was like, we're really talking about a different experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm trying to have that experience right now as we're talking. Like, and I think that would be appealing to anybody. And you can stay a Christian and still yearn for that experience.
Yeah.
It doesn't, the beliefs don't matter. It's what gets you there. And I even said that. I was like, you know, Richard talks about the the signpost that says Cleveland this way. He's like, we want to go to Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Stop worshiping the sign. Mm. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's like just going to the sign and thinking you're in Cleveland.
And going, do you agree this sign says Cleveland this way, 20 miles? I'm like, just go fucking, we're in Cleveland. Yeah. And the part of me that thinks I'm not in Cleveland resigns as its own teacher.
Also, in the, you know, the one thing I would add to that, and no surprise, and I did this for myself and it felt so good. And I was like, oh, right, I should be doing this more. It was some parenting thing. I was getting down on myself because I had lost all my resources, and pretty much the last 2 days without you here, I've been so short with Leela.
Since you've been gone, you had your chance. You blew it.
That was great.
Out of sight, out of mind. Not as good.
I'll wait. I had the moment where I was like, Leela is, you know, she basically told me that she's sad all the time. That we won't get into that story. And I was like, oh my God, she's sad all the time. Because
she also says she's happy all the time.
Yes.
We're looking at, I am going to pop in here. We're talking about a child who's getting acquainted with the concepts of all the time, always, forever.
Also getting acquainted with the feeling that she can have multiple feelings at once. Yeah, or yeah. The truth that she can have that. And I was like, cleaning up in the kitchen and just like being like, I need to step up. Like, I know it's hard, but just show up for your kid in every single moment. Like, just do it. She's feeling it. And this is it. Like, this is the feeling I often get and put on myself, is I'm like, this isn't the practice child. This child is the real one, and you are doing damage or not. Go. Like, which one do you want to do? And it's so much fucking pressure to put on myself. To every moment show up.
Yeah.
You can't. That's the thing, by the way.
And then you resign as your own teacher?
That you can't. No. Not, no. And then.
Shut your mouth. Okay. I just can't take it.
I didn't resign as my own teacher, but I sort of did. But I just went, wait a minute. Like, stop. Can you show some kindness to yourself here? Mm-hmm. Your child told you that you're sad and you have been thinking about it all day. That seems like a pretty good mom. Like, just.
Isn't it beautiful that you want to forgive?
Yes. Yeah. It's just. And what, like, instantly you like alchemize the hatred and loathing into compassion and love. And of course, Leela benefits from that when I'm feeling that way. And so too, Bran, is for you now, where when you notice that you are in that state, and I know you can get so down on yourself for the ugly thoughts that you can have there. That's like intrusive thoughts, by the way. That.
Yeah, I think I do have that. I resent it. Lately, I've been resenting it. I'm like, I just hate all of the things I was taught. Sometimes, like, it was in a good message, and then there was also a bad message sort of like snuck in there.
But you are,
fuck, I hate all this stuff is in here.
But you, as somebody who can have intrusive thoughts too, you're giving them way too much weight. You're saying that they are you.
Yeah.
They're just like misfirings.
It's like gas.
It's like MacGruber with a gun. Like, yeah, your brain is just like got two guns and it's shooting it all around.
What a great
and
image.
You're going like, these bullets are me. That's who I am. And it's like, no. This is when we're unresourced and in an unsafe place, your brain is firing all the worst things it can fire at you to try and get ahead of them, to try and protect you in some way. Mine is thinking of worst case scenarios. Yours
mine is going, look at all these idiots.
Is attacking so that you remain safe.
Oh God, it's making me sad, but also feeling very seen.
But it is, it's just like anything, just being, going to the body and what it's experiencing so that the mind will eventually calm down. But this is where Jennifer, my therapist, would say, don't get tangled in the content. If you're resenting the thoughts that you're having, you're just adding resentment to the mix.
Wow.
Can we can we add some compassion and understand? Like, it kind of first has to start with understanding, which you are doing. You're like, I haven't had my coffee. I have to poop. I'm really unresourced. So use that understanding instead of being like, Jesus, that's all it takes for me to like become a nightmare.
Yeah.
Just use the understanding to be like, so yeah, this isn't really me right now. I'm not able to be my highest self all the time. Yeah. And that's okay. And no one is. Mm. And just like give a little love. And I bet those calm down.
Give a little bit.
Which really can look, and this is what
give
I do when I'm.
A little bit of my love.
Have I talked too much, too long on this?
So funny.
It's as simple as like putting a hand on your heart and going, this is really hard. That always does it for me.
Yeah, I loved everything. And I laughed. You know me so well. When we were at coffee with Chris and Jen this morning, I laughed because you guys were on a thing and talking for quite a while. And this is a uniquely me thing. I know there are other people that relate, but I'm like, I wanted, like Jen was talking about something hard she's going through. And I like joke options, things to sing and stuff started showing up. And I just allowed myself to have this little fantasy of me singing what I wanted to sing. All three of you looking at me and clapping and saying, you exist.
That's exactly what it is.
And then going back. But instead of acting on it, I just was like, I found it humorous.
Yeah.
That I'm so scared of not existing. That's... And in this moment too, like you're talking and I go,
yeah, I know, but that is, that is a real thing. Cause
I'm not mad, but I do feel naked.
No, but it, we all have our own things and that's what, you know, and some people's wounding is being interrupted. They can't handle being interrupted and that makes perfect sense. I mean, nobody loves it, but I don't have that where I'm like, if you're interrupting me, you are not, you know, seeing me or whatever, or loving me.
Right.
And I think I've had friends or maybe fans, I don't think friends have said like, how do you handle Pete interrupting you? And the answer is that you have this wounding of, do I exist? And I see that every time you're doing it.
Yeah.
And I am your love and I have no problem letting it, you do whatever you need to do to know that you exist, because I have my own ways of doing it.
That's why you're a love genius.
But you put up with me mirroring and disappearing and all of my own ways of feeling safe. So it's not just me.
No, I know. For whatever reason, I have a timer in me. I've talked about this timer before. Just picture like a health bar in Street Fighter and it's all yellow. Mm-hmm. And then it starts getting red and draining. And that's like if I haven't existed in a while.
Yeah.
And then I actually worry that if it starts going into the negatives, that now it's weird that I haven't said something for a while. And now it's almost like I feel like I have two choices, too much or not enough.
Yeah. I think once you start working with internal family systems therapist.
Yeah, which we're talking
about.
Which
is my wish for you.
Yeah.
You will learn how to communicate to those parts in real time and you will have more options available to you. It's about you. Like you will be able to find more options in the middle ground.
Well, that's what I want because that's what I did today. Mm-hmm. I played it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's something Duncan Trussell used to teach me is like, because I would go to a spiritual retreat is a real place where I start to vanish, of course. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, Duncan was like, what if Ram Dass came up to you and were like, you're enlightened. You're the most special boy in the world. Mm-hmm. And then Buddha got off a UFO and all the great saints and they all said the same. What then?
Yeah.
And it's just like kind of like fantasize that you got what you got and recognize that that was never it anyway.
Right.
What you're actually looking for is a peaceful experience and an allowing of whatever is happening.
Yeah. I think you can picture, I picture that part of you like, I think like 12 years old, ruddy cheeks, kind of sweaty from having just done like an act for everybody and just like, and like rubbing that your forehead, like pushing your sweaty bangs out of your face and being like, okay, it's like so easy to love that part of you.
Wow.
Because that's what it is. That's all that's happening.
Yeah.
And we can love that ready 12-year-old, and we can communicate to him like, it's okay. I'll hold you while I'm talking to this other person.
Val, you are a genius. And it ideally would help us acknowledge and understand other people have their ready 12-year-olds.
Oh, yeah.
Like if my dad is losing his temper or something, mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, in the sepia-toned mean streets of Boston in 1971.
Yeah.
I'm sure
shaking his fist at a taxi cab.
Helpful to be like, ah, and that worked.
Yeah.
And it's okay. We can mm-hmm. hug that child too, or anybody's child.
Yeah.
And we're back.
Well,
we're back to the idea of an all-knowing God as an all-forgiving God. Okay. And it starts with us. And mm-hmm. we can, and what am I wrapping this up?
Like and we can be God.
Okay. The finale of the morning show season 2. We're coming for you and we're going to shake things up. Black screen. I'm like, don't give us what you think we think we want. Give us what we don't know we want.
Yeah.
Which is Succession.
And torture us a little bit.
Succession, the show you didn't know you wanted.
Yeah. And the show you think you don't want for the first 10 minutes.
And then you do.
And then you can't get enough of it. All right, everybody. Mm-hmm. That's about enough of this shit.
Thank you, Val. What a gift you are.
Oh, no.
I've missed you so much. Yeah. We'll get to some of the trials of being alone and the script that I wrote. That's an interesting story, but like, we'll do that next time.
I think
time.
You basically told the story when you were like, I basically channeled something and then it's really good.
I know. And we were laughing today that like some people channel like holy scriptures and I channel a half hour sitcom.
But either
way,
holy.
It feels really good.
It's holy.
But anyway, thank you guys. We're so happy to be back. We're going to stop missing weeks. We just got to do this. It's so important to my life.
Yeah.
So thank you, Val.
And keep it crispy.